From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of September 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds will join us. I'll bet he's still on the combine this week. We'll hear what's happening on his farm and get a reading from him about the cash grain market. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He is at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And along the way, I'll update you on all the ag news for the day right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas now joins us. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan.
Yeah, it's giddy up time.
Well, this is a stark contrast to you from a couple of weeks ago on Commodity Week. Most of those who listened probably were pretty down-faced at that time. You did, however, when I say you were trying to put a bottom in the market, it came a couple of weeks later, and here we have bounced now. The question is a bounce dead cat, or is it something that looks forward to going higher?
Well, as a technician, you always want to see follow-through. So, you know, one day doesn't necessarily make a trend, so you have to be a little cautious there. But, you know, first thing I saw this morning when I saw those weekly export sales, I says, wow, we found demand. So market had reached a point on the downside to find new export demand. And that is the function of the market, is seek out demand. And it did look like we had reached some levels here that had brought in some good demand. And then I take a look at it from a macro picture, and, you know, I said, could the trade war news get any worse? And can the crop size get any bigger? And if it did get bigger, does it really make any difference? I mean, is there a difference between an 800 and 75 million bushel carry out in beans versus a 925 million bushel carry out in beans? I don't know if that makes any difference anymore. So I kind of think those two assumptions is, you know, is the crop going to get bigger? If it's going to get bigger, does it make any difference? And then could the trade news get any worse after this week's announcement on adding additional tariffs on trade? So, you know, in that one sense, I think one could maybe argue that all of the bearishness is pretty well priced into the market because of the September crop report got bigger than everybody thought it would, especially on corn. And then, you know, we kind of knew the additional tariffs were hanging out there, and then they were finally solidified earlier this week. Seasonally, if we are turning higher, it would only be a couple weeks early. When you look at averages, whether you look at like a 20-year average or a 10-year average or 30-year average, markets have a tendency to work their way into an early October low. Beans have a tendency to never look back once that low is in place. Corn has a strong tendency to maybe come back and test it during the December delivery period, early December. And then once you get past that holiday type thing, the markets then begin, on average, a seasonal climb, you know, into the growing season. So we're not that far off. I mean, yes, if we are making seasonal turns this week, price action, we got beans, we got an outside week going in beans. If the strength maintains through tomorrow, and then if it maintains and if we can build on this week's strength or today's close through next week, we could end up with a monthly reversal to the upside. And from a technical perspective, that would be a fairly solid signal that we've maybe found the bottom end of the price range. Corn, where we have a reversal going up in corn. It's not an outside up reversal like what we have in soybeans for the week. But corn is going to be pretty hard to maybe get a higher monthly close on corn. But unless we'd have a pretty big up week next week, that crop report really hammered corn pretty bad with that big yield. But, you know, it looks to me, and then you look at the macro thing, you look at the dollar just really fell apart here today. And basically what it was your other emerging market currencies, emerging market bankers all kind of raised interest rates. So the cheaper dollar helps us be more competitive in the export market. There's also news out today that Argentina had sold all of their beans to China, and now they're up in the United States buying beans from the United States to replace those beans. And I've mentioned this a long time ago, is that I really hate to say this, but everybody in this world's on the take. It's just a matter of how much money it takes to get something done. But it doesn't take much work to have documentation changed on origination. So maybe the people that are in that type of business have finally figured it out, how to do it the cheapest way to move inventory around the world and not necessarily know where it's coming from. I mean, Argentina's already found it out, sell their beans at a premium to China, then come up to the United States and buy theirs at a discount. And then once they get them into Argentina, they can change documentation and send them back out to China again. So looks like Argentina's figured it out real quick.
Well, they would probably send bean meal, to be clear. they'd likely crush it as well there.
Yeah. So
hey, go
ahead.
I do have a question on this though. So there are lots of things that are moving parts here. However, when we bounced. At the bottom, and you know, we put new contract lows in. The basis levels differences between Brazil origination and Port of New Orleans originations was $4 or $6, something like that. So our price was U.S. price was way under the price of soybeans coming out of Brazil. Doesn't seem like it would be all that much of a stretch to think that would stimulate some demand. We have African swine flu in China, and they're talking, and we'll hear this in just a bit already, to other nations about changing their ration and cutting back the bean meal ration for the hog herd that they'll have left, whatever that happens to be. So the question is, we've bounced, but to what level might we go? I mean, what's a good price for soybeans in November?
Well, I'll give you a shot at it. Let's put it that way. Okay. When you look at the technical indicators like RSI, stochastics, whatever one you want to pick out, their lows are higher than the lows that they made here in July on a weekly chart than what they made here this week. So what we call that is a bullish divergence. That means that this move to new lows in November soybeans was kind of phony in a way. It wasn't warranted from a fundamental perspective. So if these bullish divergences are valid, it says that you have a shot at going back to the late July highs, which would be something in that 9.10, 9.15. That would be what I would be kind of shooting for when you look at divergences. So push on up toward $9, I know sounds like a long ways away, but technical traders that are going to take a position in this market is going to be looking for something like that, or otherwise it's not worth taking a position. I mean, unless you're going to try to make a buck in beans or a buck and a half in beans, why even mess around with it? You're not playing for, a 20-cent move. So, you know, I think, you know, a shot back to the $9 is possible. We may not have the fundamental strength to do that, but I would say for someone that's maybe, we pretty much have to get up to 875 to really trigger a good buy signal in beans. But if we could close above 875, I think then we're on our way to the $9 level, or at least a test of that those highs that were recorded in late July. So, and then it would also kind of indicate that this move that we made new contract lows on the daily chart. If you look at the daily chart, like I had a trend line drawn from the July lows connected here to the August lows. And then this week we went down underneath that sideways to higher uptrend line for 2 days. We had two closes below it. Yesterday we came back and closed above that trend line, and now we followed through today. So one could maybe argue that this early week move, or the announcement that Trump was going to expand the tariffs on another $200 million worth of goods, was basically a bear trap. it does indicate that that's, you know, in the cards. If you want to take a look at Dease Corn, we also have a bullish divergence developing in technical indicators that could tell you that maybe December corn would have an upside potential to pop out this 391, 392 level. So there's an indication from a technical perspective that so, you know, if you're a fund trader, if you're a technical trader, those are kind of the targets that you're going to be shooting for if you're going to take a position, or otherwise you're not even going to mess around taking a position. So that's the way I look at it from a technical perspective. It doesn't mean that we're going to go there, but that would be the upside potentials that a technical trader would be looking at if he's going to probe the long side of the commodity market.
As always, we always love to hear what you have to say about the markets and how you're reading the charts. We'll talk with you again next Thursday. Thanks so much, Dan.
Very well, Todd.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, Secretary Sonny Perdue says if China does not elect to negotiate with the United States and stop unfair trade practices, he will recommend another U.S. action besides tariffs. Gary Crawford has more.
One of the first things President Trump did when taking office was pull out of the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. Then last April, the president opened a little crack in the door to rejoin TPP, telling reporters,
I don't want to go back into TPP, but if they offered us a deal that I can't refuse on behalf of the United States, I would do it.
Fast forward now to the present. The U.S. is in a trade battle of tariffs with China, a nation not in the TPP, a nation that's been the number one foreign customer for U.S. farm goods.
We probably made a mistake as American producers have become so dependent on the China market. It was easy, big, and we probably became more dependent on them than they became on us.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue telling reporters during his trip to Maine this week that if China does not relent and negotiate with the U.S.,
I'm going to suggest to the president that we regain our partners in the TPP and put a united front against China.
He did not put a timeline on when he might do that. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Let's stick with trade, but move around the globe. The United States has supplanted Brazil as the European Union's top supplier of soybeans. In the 12 weeks to mid-September, U.S. soybeans accounted for 52% of imports to the EU, rising 133% compared with the same period last year to 1.47 million tons. The United States had just 25% of the market in the same period of 2017. Imports from Brazil dropped to a 40% share of the bloc's roughly 35 million ton annual import market for the animal feed staple. In June, China largely stopped buying U.S. soybeans in retaliation for trade measures that Mr. Trump targeted at Beijing, prompting European farmers to switch to buying cheaper U.S. soy. Well, here's another story on how grain flows across the planet are being reallocated. India has urged China to drop a years-long ban on rapeseed meal imports from the South Asian nation, at a meeting with government officials and feed makers as it aims to boost sales of critical farm goods. The meeting was held at India's embassy in Beijing on Wednesday. That, according to an Indian government official and a soy meal purchasing manager at a pig farm who attended and spoke to Reuters on the sidelines. The aim was to lobby China to resume purchases of rapeseed meal, a key ingredient in animal feed, and to drum up interest in the country's other major agricultural products. China was the biggest buyer of Indian rapeseed meal until Beijing banned the purchases in late 2011 over quality concerns. The meeting in China ended without any concrete results, but there will be more meetings in China and Delhi on the issue, said an Indian government official. A copy of the meeting schedule, reviewed by Reuters, described it as a meeting of buyers and sellers, with a session introducing India's exporters, followed by one-on-one meetings between importers and exporters. And one more story about the global reallocation of agricultural assets. A Rabobank report says the African swine fever virus has shifted the outlook for the global pork industry. The virus was first found in China and has now been confirmed in Belgium. The report predicts a supply gap of 2 million to 3 million metric tons that may emerge. Rabobank also says finding the virus in feral hogs in Belgium may make it much harder to contain the spread if those wild animals carry the virus into other countries. And finally today, the Farm Bill. A September Farm Bill timeframe has been in place for a while. The law expires, of course, at the end of this month. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, a Farm Bill Conference Committee member, says in an Omaha World editorial, House Senate negotiators are now running into problems, hashing out differences over farm subsidies, conservation support, and food stamp work requirements. Senate Ag Chair Pat Roberts seemed to acknowledge the difficulty in getting a compromise back to his chamber last week.
That would be a pretty heavy lift.
The House and Senate are now recessed for a religious holiday until next week, when the two bodies will be in session together for just 4 days. Is it time for an extension? One reporter asked Iowa's senior senator Chuck Grassley this week.
No, they wouldn't dare talk about that. That would slow down negotiations at this point. I'd say they start talking about that the middle of October.
But that's 2 weeks after the current law expires, during which only mandatory spending like farm payments and food stamps will continue. A frustrated National Corn Growers CEO John Doggett suggests House negotiators are unwilling to compromise on their tougher SNAP work requirements.
If we had people who really wanted to get this done, and who would be willing to bend a little bit, make some compromises, and negotiate in good faith, I think we can have it done by the end of the month. But those things have to happen. We cannot afford in rural America to have philosophical stands that prevent us from being able to get a farm bill done.
Iowa's Joni Ernst calls for a reasonable compromise, and Chairman Roberts stressed the need for certainty and predictability amid years of low crop prices and an escalating tariff war with China. House negotiators, backed by President Trump, may have taken a tougher stance on their key differences with the Senate to boost work requirements to qualify for food stamps. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Now we're joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. I think you've just gotten out of the cab this afternoon, Matt. Thanks so much for being with us, taking time out of your busy schedule there on the farm. Quite a little rally today in the soybeans. Corn not too bad either. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, you know, I think a few things to think of it. First of all, I mean, obviously the market hasn't seen the light of day for a while. We've been a little bit oversold, and I think whenever you look at this market, you got to ask yourself how much is enough. And so I think, you know, corn got down under 350, and then we kind of bounced right back, you know, in good fashion here this week. And then you see the soybean market with a 30-plus cent run-up in 2 days. And so I think it's definitely well received. It's hard to believe that we would have made a harvest low just yet. But for a variety of factors, I think that might be, you might be able to make that case.
You and Dan Zwicker both are making that case today. That'll cause some producers to reconsider what they're doing with soybeans that have to go to town across the scale. Should they really do that and put them into storage there?
Well, I hate to be boring and agree with Dan, but, why not? He's a lot smarter than what I am. But, you know, as far as commercial storage goes, this year, most elevators in our part of the world raise their storage rates. It's made producers very gun-shy, but on the same token, it's pretty hard to sell the cash whenever the basis is as wide as what it is. So it's not an ideal situation if you don't have on-farm storage at this point. But I can't tell you with any degree of certainty which one of these strategies will work best, selling it, re-own it, or commercial storage. And so I would say a person needs to probably do a little bit of both.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt.
Absolutely.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seats. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us for the day.
Great being here, Todd. Hope you're having a great day over there.
Oh, I really am. A lot of harvest happening across the Midwest, but the planting season is also underway in South America. What are conditions like there?
Well, in South America, the big story is that the rainy season has started ahead of schedule. Normally, we don't start to see some pretty good rains until October, but those have started up over the last week or so, and there's more on the way over the next 1 to 2 weeks. So overall, we don't see dryness as being a limiting factor for soybean planting in Brazil going forward. The one thing we are a little bit concerned about, though, regards how much rain there is going to be in the southern growing areas. This is where corn is planted first, and then soybean planting also begins here fairly shortly. A lot of rain is coming up for this southern area. They do average about 2 3/4 of an inch of rain over the next 2 weeks, but there's a lot of indications that they'll be receiving 4, 5, 6, maybe even 7 or 8 inches of rain over the next 2 weeks. So that will be something to monitor, but we have seen these very wet periods in their spring in the past, and it has not led to much of a production problem. So at this point, just not too much concern regarding that.
Any concern here in the United States at all?
Well, we do have quite a bit of rain that fell overnight in northern Iowa and parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin. This is the same area that was pretty wet a couple of weeks ago. They'll see a few more thunderstorms tonight and another pretty big rain in about 5 days from now. But other than that, things will start to dry out a lot across the Corn Belt once we get into the second half of next week. The second half of next week is also interesting because it will turn much colder. Temperatures will be 25, 30 degrees colder than where they have been. High temperatures will only make it into the 50s and 60s, and we more than likely will see our first big frosts of the year starting up next Thursday or Friday, especially to the north of Interstate 80. So a big pattern change is coming up in about 7 to 10 days, and the summerish weather that we've had and we still have in place today is going to be a thing of the past, unfortunately, because I know myself, I could live with it every day like this. I don't really want it to end.
Indeed. So the frost that comes, is that out of the ordinary in the time frame?
It's pretty much on time, especially for the Dakotas and Minnesota. Once you start dipping into Iowa and Illinois, that is getting a little bit on the early side, but it's too far out to determine if we're going to see temperatures between 32 degrees and 36, which is right at or above freezing, or if we're going to dip down into the 20s, which would be a little more of a significant event. At this point, it just looks like a run-of-the-mill frost or freeze, but the bigger story, again, is that it's not going to be a one-and-done deal. It's going to turn colder and then stay colder for about 4 or 5 days.
So we'll be down in those cold ranges. Farmers will be putting sweatshirts on when they go out in the morning, that's for sure, unlike they have as of recent. How cold will it be, roughly speaking, during the daytime hours?
Well, we think high temperatures in Illinois will mostly range from the 60s south to maybe the 50s in the north. So it will be a lot more fallish and a lot more footballish, if you will. But we're not looking for things much colder than that.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.